down.
This is Health First with Kathy Hart, available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
We've been talking to Delia McCabe, Feed Your Brain, the cookbook. It's out now, a beautiful cookbook. We were just talking about the nutrients needed to feed the brain. And Delia, you were just saying that like getting them through food is the research that's really feeding the brain, is using your foods correctly. What do you make of all this omega-3 fatty acids feeding the brain?
Well, omega-3s are extremely important in the brain because they are very sophisticated fat molecules that allow electrochemical communication between neurons. So omega-3 is extremely important. The challenge, of course, is to get omega-3 in a form that is undamaged. And that becomes a huge challenge when one considers the fact that omega-3 is the most sensitive essential fat and one that is easily damaged by light, heat, and oxygen exposure. So I tell people that when they choose a supplement, they need to choose a supplement very carefully and make sure that it is an undamaged supplement. It needs to be organic, it needs to be cold pressed, it needs to be in a dark glass bottle, and it needs to be kept in the fridge. And in that way, they can ensure that that omega-3 is not undamaged. The other thing, Kathy, that people don't really realize is that omega-6 is also extremely important in the brain. And a lot of media hype has said that omega-6 is bad and we shouldn't consume it. And once again, there's a kernel of truth in the story, because omega-6 is easily damaged also by light, heat, and oxygen. And most of the omega-6 available in shelf-stable oils has been badly damaged via processing. So once again, omega-6 also needs to be carefully chosen. So both omega-3 and omega-6 are very important in the diet. And getting them in an undamaged form is extremely important. However, it is hard to get enough omega-3 from our diet. So choosing a supplement has got to be a really carefully chosen thing.
Is it safer and easier to get fresher omega-3s from plant-based, say from algae or from nuts and seeds like walnuts? Is that a better way, or is it good to eat the fish oils?
Look, in a perfect world, we would love to eat real fish that come out of the ocean, wild-caught fish such as salmon and mackerel and herring, which are the fish that contain great quantities of omega-3. That's in an ideal world, but our oceans are pretty damaged today. Mm-hmm. So I suggest that people look for a good plant form of omega-3, and if they're going to use an algae form, that's also fine, but just make sure that it's also processed, you know, with great care. And the body is quite capable of converting the plant form of omega-3 into the DHA and the EPA that the brain uses. All we need to do is make sure that we have enough vitamin B, C, zinc and magnesium, and then our body can easily do that conversion, Kathy. So that's not an issue, and it's unfortunately made into an issue by a lot of people that sell fish oil supplements.
Right, yeah. Let's go on to protein, Delia. How much would a full-size adult need to fuel their brain every day? And what kind of sources?
Well, look, it's a great question, and once again, the paleo diet and the Atkins diet, you know, everyone loves to hear good news about their bad habits or, you know, the food that they love to eat. And people have believed for a long time that you have to eat a lot of protein to be able to fuel your body and your brain. And this isn't actually true. Obviously, it depends on body size and it depends on activity level, but vast quantities of protein don't actually serve us. What we need to make sure is that the protein we do consume is clean protein. So if people want to eat animal products, they need to make sure they're organic, because pesticides and herbicides accumulate the animal products. So we need to make sure we avoid those, because we don't want those in our brain. The other thing about protein is it being digested optimally? Now, this, of course, brings us right back to digestion, which is a very important topic in brain health. And as people get older, their hydrochloric acid decreases. And if people eat protein and it's not being absorbed or digested first and then absorbed optimally, this will definitely impact all physical health, and it also will impact brain health, because a lot of the protein gets broken down into amino acids, which become neurotransmitters in a lot of the cases. So it will impact brain function if protein digestion isn't optimal. So I suggest to people that when they eat high protein foods and they feel a little bit bloated and they're not their digestion isn't working optimally, they need to make sure that it does work optimally by using digestive enzymes, good probiotics, and also making sure that they have enough fiber in their diet to optimize digestion of protein.
Mm-hmm. In your beautiful recipe books here, it's all gluten-free. Can you tell us why there's no gluten?
Well, it's an interesting question. We kind of have two answers, Kathy. The first answer is that many years ago, we discovered that my son was sensitive to gluten. And I said to him, even if he was really young, and I said to him, look, you know, you're going to have to go without gluten if you want to really be healthy, but I'll make sure you never feel deprived. And so I had to set out to make really tasty food without gluten, which is a bit of a challenge when it comes to cakes and cookies and so on. But I did that because I knew it was important for him. Gluten really had a bad effect on him, Kathy. So that was kind of like my first step. So as a family, we started eating gluten-free naturally. But then what started coming out is all this research pointing to the fact that gluten is actually very damaging to the brain, directly and indirectly via the gut, where it can cause leaky gut, and that causes dysbiosis. And then, of course, even that it can cross the blood-brain barrier and cause an impact in the brain, which is current research. So I'm kind of glad that I made that decision all those years ago. And I think that people can benefit from eating less gluten because there's gluten in so much of the food that we eat today, including the processed food. And I think that is a challenge. So I'm happy that the book is gluten-free because there are a lot of people that have a challenge and they may not even realize it until they go off gluten and notice a huge improvement in their health.
Mm-hmm. And nuts, seeds, legumes, they're all in the cookbook as well. How do we make that easier to digest them, and how do we make them the most nutrient value?
It's a good question, and I often tell people when I give a talk that the first thing that you need to do about your digestive system is chew your food. And you know, sometimes they look at me like, oh, isn't it more complicated than that? Because the first step is to chew well, and I think we often forget to chew well because we eat when we're in a rush, we eat when we time poor, and we eat maybe in front of the TV, and all of those situations reduce enzyme production in our mouth, which is where digestion starts. So I think chewing our food really well is important. And the other thing as far as legumes and grains go, I always soak my grains and my legumes before I cook them. And that's an important step in the process because they do contain a particular compound that can make digestion more or harder if that compound isn't broken down. And I discuss that in my book in some detail. So soaking the legumes and the grains before consuming them is an important part of the digestion process, which starts even before you put it in your mouth. Mm-hmm. So I do suggest that people do that.
Yeah, and they don't have to be soaked that long. It doesn't have to be soaked overnight or anything. Just soak for half an hour?
Okay, I prefer to soak them overnight, and even for a couple of hours is better than not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
When people buy my book, they get access to extra resources on my website where I give them a meal plan, actually a two-week meal plan. And in the meal plan, I actually say to them, well, soak your nuts and beans, your legumes or your nuts or your beans or your grains on a certain day, and then I let them cook them on another day. So I get people into the habit by following that procedure because it just simply makes it easier when you're planning your meals for the week. And I get people to do that often on a Sunday night.
Mm.
And it's really simple. It just slots into your daily and your weekly feeding routine, and soon it just becomes a habit. And I do suggest that people do that.
Yeah. Okay. The carbohydrates you suggest for stable energy for the brain. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. Carbohydrates, I think when you talk about carbohydrates, a lot of people think about starch. And I'm not talking about starch when I talk about carbohydrates in the form of stable energy for the brain. Carbohydrates are everything from broccoli to oranges and from green leafy salad vegetables to sprouts. I prefer to use things like sweet potatoes and quinoa and millet as more starchy carbohydrates because they're also full of fiber. But when you eat carbohydrates that have a double function, that provide carbohydrates and loads of vitamins and minerals, you're supplying your brain with exactly what it needs. Because it needs that stable energy, which comes from fiber-filled carbohydrates, and it also needs the vitamins and the minerals. So I suggest that people start thinking about that way of eating, because that makes it really simple for you when you're preparing meals. You really get it's good value for your money that way.
Mm-hmm. And this is really what the prebiotics are now for the probiotics to feed off of, isn't it?
Absolutely. There are a number of foods that are really great prebiotics, and I include many of them in my recipe book. And one of our favorite ones as a family are artichokes. So it's a fabulous food. And when you provide those prebiotics, you're setting a beautiful stage for the probiotics to do their job and absolutely to improve digestion. So yeah, carbohydrates, prebiotics, all in one go.
Mm-hmm. And the last, number 7, was the foundation fats for your brain. What are the best fats to feed your brain?
Well, we covered this a little bit, Kathy, with the omega-3 and the omega-6. Very, very important for brain function. But also we need to consume saturated fats and monounsaturated fats. Although our body can make these fats and oils, and this is a complex conversation, and my chapter 7 in my first book goes into a lot of detail about these fats. We do need to make sure that the saturated fats and the monounsaturated fats that we consume are also undamaged and pure. Simply because, as I mentioned earlier, pesticides and herbicides and toxic compounds accumulate in animal products.
Mm-hmm.
So although there's now this huge focus on consuming, you know, lots of animal products like butter and meat, people need to be aware of the fact that animal products are really potentially quite damaging to the brain when they contain vast quantities of toxins, which unfortunately they do if they're not pasture-fed, you know, grass-fed and organic.
Mm-hmm.
So I do suggest that when people think about, you know, the fats that they consume, they keep that in mind as well.
Mm-hmm.
Coconut oil is a great, great saturated fat. Monounsaturated fat and oils, the most famous one is olive oil. Fantastic oil, not just because it's a fat, but because of all the other compounds, the plant compounds it contains, really healthy for us. We know the Mediterranean diet is very much focused on good olive oil, but once again, it needs to be organic and virgin, extra virgin, cold pressed.
Tilia, you have a great quote in your book: "A goal without a plan is just a wish." How do we put this into practice? How do you create beautiful meals every day?
For me, it is a matter of being prepared, and I've been doing this for a long time, but I've made it really easy for people in my extra resources, because I say to them, this is the shopping list that you now need to focus on, this is the meal plan, this is how you can prep yourself, this is what you put in your fridge and your freezer. Because I think once people have all of those things, you know, at hand, it's so much easier to throw it together. And I have found for myself, doing the prep work that I speak about, I think it's on page 16, for me has made a huge, page 15 and 16, it's made a huge difference just being prepared. And it just means that you can walk into the kitchen on a weeknight and throw a meal together in 20, 25 minutes that's really nutrient-dense, that feeds your brain and your body. But just that little bit of preparation, as you say, Kathy, you know, takes us away from a wish and to a real plan.
Delia, we've run out of time. Thank you so much for being on the program today. Thank you for writing this cookbook, Feed Your Brain, the cookbook, a beautiful, beautiful book. Pick it up now.